they do, what their desires are, what their mission is, what their goal is, what their ultimate objective is in this journey, in this journey of the ubudiyya of Allah. Also, one needs to be strict with oneself. One needs to examine oneself and to learn the basic principles of the activities of the soul, and also pay attention to spiritual nutrition. Now, activities and different aspects of the soul, different qualities, if we could say, you know, such as anger or greed or jealousy or desire, these things need to be examined very carefully. And of course, the salah and the du'as that have been prescribed are spiritual nutrition. And so in these few ways, we are able to protect ourselves from the intrusions and the deceptions of shaitan and the nafs-e ammara in order to be able to strengthen and purify our ubudiyya.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير.
Allah is the unique Arabic name for the one true God. He is the only one worthy of worship, with no rivals, equals, or partners. Allah is not like His creation, as nothing shares His divine essence and attributes, such as being the Creator, the Provider, the Most Merciful, the All-Powerful, the Most Just, the All-Wise, and the All-Knowing. Allah is without partner or equal in His authority and actions. The world was created by Allah's command alone. He runs the world and controls it all alone. Muslims believe that Allah is one, indivisible, and unequal in His divinity and knowledge. He does not have any ancestors, nor does He have descendants, and He is without wife, partner, or offspring. None came before Him, and He is in no need of any angel, prophet, or saint. Of all the sins committed by His creation, none is greater than the act of shirk, which is the Arabic word for associating partners with Allah. In the Islamic tradition, Allah has 99 names, which include the most loving, the friend, the most kind, and the most powerful. Allah can be translated in English language as the one and only God.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were speaking about, which was how to protect ourselves from the effects of the intrusions and the deceptions of shaitan and the nafs-e ammara when it comes to our ubudiyya, and of course the effects that this intrusion has upon our ubudiyya. Now, of course, when talking about the effects of the intrusions and deceptions of shaitan and the nafs-e ammara, Of course, we find that our ubudiya, our worship, our du'as, they are no longer as sincere as they used to be. They are no longer as, they don't bring about the bliss and satisfaction that they used to, or they become tainted and corrupted. And of course, the intended consequence, which is the ultimate perfection of a human being, is not achieved. Of course, why? Because of the deceptions and the intrusions of shaitan and the nafs-e-ammara. In the previous segment, we talked a little bit about how we need to protect ourselves by examining within ourselves, self-reflection, contemplation, meditation, and of course, spiritual nutrition, such as the daily prayers, such as the du'as prescribed by the Ahlul Bayt. Another one of the things that we should do is to kind of distrust what we are doing in our activities and our ubudiya, meaning always check ourselves. Are we really doing a certain action for the pure sake of ubudiya? This is what is meant by distrusting yourself when it comes to your activities. So for example, you're giving charity. At the very superficial level, you might think that you are doing it for the sake of Allah. But when you think about it a little bit deeply, and you kind of double-check yourself, you cross-examine yourself, then you might realize that I was doing it to show off to other people, and perhaps even more subconsciously and more in a subtle manner. We might just be doing it to show it to the person that we are giving the charity to. And so it is quite possible, dear friends, that because of a little bit of negligence and not paying attention, this kind of ulterior motive, this tainted niyyah, may overcome a human being and knock them down and drive them towards perdition and annihilation. When one realizes that the actions that they did for ubudiya and the actions that they did in ubudiya for the sake of Allah were not done purely for the sake of Allah, then truly we have lost both in this world and the hereafter. And when we do realize that perhaps in the actions that we committed in the past there was an ulterior motive, we ask Allah the Almighty, who is the most merciful and the most quick to forgive, we ask Him to forgive us and to make up for the faults and the flaws and the shortcomings in our ubudiya and our worship. And so therefore we must try our best to make sure that the intrusions and the deceptions and the tricks of shaitan and the nafs-e-ammara, the base carnal soul, we protect ourselves from these deceptions and these tricks so that we can purify and strengthen our ubudiya, our servitude, our worship, and our obedience to Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website, www.parstoday.com.
And now we invite you to listen to Brother Nu'man Ali Khan.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. فدلاهما بغرور رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. The 22nd ayah of Surah Al-A'raf is a long one, but in this brief reminder I want to share with you the first part of the expression that's used in it that has just an incredible amount of wisdom for life in our dealings with shaitan. Allah Azza wa Jalla is describing how shaitan got our parents Adam and Hawa salamun alayhima to make the mistake that they made. What was his strategy to get them to listen to him? Not just what he said to them. We all know that he whispered to them. We all know that he offered them eternity and that they could stay in Jannah. We know that. But how did he do it? What method did he use? That method is important to understand, and it's captured in the first expression of the ayah. فَدَلَّ هُمَا بِغُرُورٍ. He, dalla is used when you draw a bucket. Like dalw in Arabic is a bucket. And adla is to drop a bucket down and pull it right back up. You know, in the old times, there's a well and you kind of crank up the water. You know, and you pull the bucket back up. This is adla. But dalla is to slowly lower the bucket or to put a bucket, you know, for a very primitive way of hunting an animal. You have some food, like a carrot or something. You put it inside a bucket and it's tied to a rope. And the animal comes and you kind of pull it little by little by little by little towards yourself. And the animal follows it. This is actually called dalla. Like literally, shaitan didn't go out and say, disobey Allah. He offered it a little bit, just a small little bit of compromise. And they listened. And then he offered just a little bit more. It's harmless. What I'm saying isn't haram. I'm just saying, just don't take it a little bit easy. You know? And then you don't have to eat from this tree, in the case of our parents. You don't have to eat from. I'm not saying you should eat from the tree. I'm just saying at least check it out. It's a beautiful tree. There's no harm looking at it, is there? Now, look, Allah's commandment was, وَلَا تَقْرَبَ هَذِهِ الشَّجَرَةِ. Don't go near this tree. So the first thing he says, look, at least you're not touching it. Okay? At least you're not touching it. Just go near it. What's the big deal? And then when they go near, then you know what? It's not like you're not supposed to climb it. You're just not supposed to eat from it. Just have a little climb. It's no big deal. And it's not at one time. Dalla also suggests that these suggestions came a day, then another day, then another day, then another day. Like this was a process for this guy. It wasn't like he whispered to Adam alayhi salam and immediately he went and ate from the tree. There's actually an entire strategic, little by little by little, winning over the argument that he's doing. فَدَلَّهُمَا بِغُرُورٍ. And that's what he does to us to this day. This is the reason it's mentioned in the Quran. That he drew them out with using this. And the بِغُرُورَ, I didn't translate. Using deception. This is a kind of deception. In other words, there are things that are clearly wrong. You and I know that. There are things that are clearly, clearly wrong.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. أحتمي بحماه حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روبا شابت غازا
جروم هيوز بروسلز
سعيد بورزا لندن
راشا ساقلم اسطنبول
سيد أمين علمي كابول
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The moment an exhibition turned into a series of violent assaults committed by the MKO, a cult-like organization that has the blood of 17,000 Iranians on its hands. Press TV's camera crew, reporting on an exhibition showcasing MKO bombings and assassinations, was attacked by angry supporters of the group.
Don't touch my camera. Don't touch my camera.
Go deep.
Don't touch my camera.
You go deep.
After being driven out of post-revolution Iran, the MKO based itself in Camp Ashraf in Iraq, where members were forced to pledge allegiance to its leader Masoud Rajavi and demonstrate that allegiance with cult-like behavior for women that meant divorcing their husbands and marrying him. Many families spent years on the fringes of the camp begging for their children to be released, but to no avail. The camp was later dismantled in the wake of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Until 2012, the MKO was on the U.S. terrorist list. It was also blacklisted by the EU until 2009. Since being removed, the new leader of the cult, Mariam Rajavi has forged close relationships with Western officials.
What unfolded on the streets of Stockholm today was a shocking reminder that the EU has become a safe haven for the MKO, which attacks journalists like myself with little fear of retribution. The question now is, will there be an investigation? Bianca Rahimi, Stockholm.
We are visiting Afghan food markets, where prices are hiking day by day. Food items are short, and people don't have cash to buy them. Customers here tell us about their struggle to provide food and livelihoods.
If I save the whole salary of my 20 days of work, I will be able to buy a sack of flour, because I hardly can make only a dollar per day. However, most of the days, I'm without the job. In such a situation where prices are also skyrocketing, I can no longer provide livelihoods for my family.
On Wednesday, the UN chief said the impacts of the war in Ukraine have generated food and finance crises globally, with vulnerable ones being hit hard. Afghan experts say Afghanistan is among the countries affected harshly.
Previously, the prices of food items, including that of flour, were lower. Since the beginning of Russia-Ukraine conflict, the prices have started to rise. Then a sack of flour was $17, but now it is nearly $30. Unfortunately, our country is also facing an unprecedented drought that has a significant role in food shortages.
In the meantime, Afghan traders and businessmen also complain about the severe impacts of freezing Afghan assets by the U.S. and global sanctions on the country.
The U.S. seizing of Afghan assets has left a severe effect on our markets and livelihoods. Earlier, a dollar was exchanged with 77 Afghanis, but now, due to U.S. sanctions, a dollar has been raised to 89. We urge the U.S. and the international community to not add to the miseries of Afghan people and free their frozen funds as soon as possible.
Following the Taliban takeover, the U.S. and allies froze some $9 billion in Afghan central bank assets, and major funding to the country was halted. Sanctions and ripple effects from the war in Ukraine have triggered food crisis in Afghanistan. Most people here say they can afford a single sack of flour, since the prices have more than doubled. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
There was no sign of pressure on the faces of those who run the European Central Bank when they met on Thursday to agree on bad news for hard-pressed mortgage holders across the 19-nation eurozone. Interest rates will go up by 0.25% next month, most likely 0.5% in September, and that's not where it will end.
Beyond September, based on our current assessment, we anticipate that a gradual but sustained path of further increases in interest rates will be appropriate.
The ECB manages the euro. It will be the bank's first interest rate hike in 11 years. The idea is to bring down inflation. It's now at a record high of 8.1% when the ECB's target is just below 2%. Rising energy, food and accommodation prices are hitting EU citizens hard.
Living in Brussels as well, the cost of living is high already, and then so if it's going up, it's even worse.
Everything is like, so you have to be careful, calculate like exactly what you spend on.
The people got some situation that they don't got enough money to go to the end of the month.
The EU mainly blames Moscow for the financial crisis because of the conflict in Ukraine. The bloc's justice ministers also met on Thursday to figure out a way of seizing the assets of Russian citizens without the need for a conviction in court.
It's a discussion that I've had also with our US colleagues. We are on the same line to try to see what is possible to do. But you know that we try to promote the rule of law.
Off the back of sanctions against Russia, the EU's economy is on its knees. Critics say Western powers were wrong not to listen to Moscow's security concerns as they built up military capabilities close to Russia's borders and refused to rule out Ukraine joining NATO. ECB bosses are due to meet again to discuss the financial crisis on the 21st of July. Many are asking if the EU's focus stays on arming Ukraine and not conflict resolution, how can things possibly improve between now and then?
We're on our way to the front line, outside the key Ukrainian stronghold of Avdiivka.
We pull up by the side of the road. It feels like no man's land.
The town is fortified well, but we're working on them, dismantling their dugouts with artillery. We're making passages in their defenses and going deeper. You can hear our volleys now.
Now, it's too dangerous to take the car along this road, as it can be a target for anti-tank missiles fired from the Ukrainians, who are just about a kilometer in that direction, so we're going on foot.
These fighters are from the Donbas, now loyal to Russia. They've been fighting here against Ukrainian nationalists for 8 years. Trench warfare has returned once again to Europe. While some of the world's most advanced weapons are slaughtering dozens of soldiers every day, the best defense remains underground. The living quarters, it's infested with kittens. The soldiers tell me that they have them at every outpost. They bring good luck, they say. More likely, much needed comfort in this brutal war.
Now, Adyevka is just over in that direction there. It's so well fortified that risking a frontal attack would cost so many lives, or indeed may not even be possible. That's why the Russian army is trying to encircle the Ukrainian army to the north of here. And then, after it does that, if it's able to do that, they plan to come down here and take Adyevka. Because to take Donbass, the whole of Donbass, it's major fortifications like this which will have to be taken as well.
The remains of mortar shells. The trenches are doing their job. It's been some time since Russia has released its casualty figures, perhaps because the number might be hard for Russian people to swallow. But it's clear, with overwhelming air and artillery superiority, Russia is winning this war, where the fighting is fiercest. The next outpost, as promised, more kittens. Russian soldiers are being dehumanized by Ukrainian propaganda as monsters and orcs, leading to atrocities committed against Russian POWs. But it's clear these soldiers are very human indeed. Upon hearing I was British, one of the soldiers appealed to me to tell the truth about what was happening here to people back in the UK. I asked him what that truth was.
That there's a genocide of the Russian-speaking population going on here. The Ukrainians have been shelling our people for 8 years. They are trying to extinguish us. Tell them about this at least. At any moment, I can die here. But I am on my land and I will fight for it.
No doubt the Ukrainian soldiers in their trenches across the fields will have a very different version of the truth. Compromise is being achieved through war. Appropriately for this European conflict, poppies grow in the trenches. Many years from now, perhaps soldiers from both sides will be able to commemorate their fallen comrades together. But for now, the battle for the Donbass rages on. Jenny Miller, Donbass.
The majority of the EU's 705 legislators do support the 27-nation bloc's handling of the Ukraine conflict, but a growing minority are very unhappy. On the issue of sanctions, the EU has been accused of double standards and hypocrisy.
C'est que quand la Russie attaque...
If Russia attacks Ukraine, there will be sanctions. When the US bombs Iraq, no sanctions. When Saudi Arabia bombs Yemen, no sanctions. When the EU destroys Libya, no sanctions. When Israel colonizes Palestine, no sanctions.
When dissenting voices in the European Parliament highlight Ukraine's history of corruption or the need for greater diplomatic efforts with Russia, they are often shut down.
Please, dear colleagues, try to do preventive diplomacy. As somebody who has gone through
you have
war,
to come to
I know that war does not resolve anything. Thank you.
Mainly due to the conflict, energy and food prices continue to soar in the EU, placing enormous financial hardship on citizens. Despite this, it seems the focus remains fixed on weapons.
Our unprecedented military support package of 2 billion euros under the European peace facility helps Ukraine defend its population.
Some analysts blame NATO and the EU, directed by the United States, for provoking Russia into military action.
And now, for Ukraine, it's a very bad situation. For Russia also, and for Europe, it's a very bad situation.
Any of the 27 leaders in the EU can veto key policies in the European Council. For example, Hungary has been blocking a total ban on Russian oil imports. Some lawmakers want the veto option to be scrapped.
For 1 month, we put our indecisiveness out on full display. And what was the outcome? The perception that one member state won and the EU as a collective lost.
Other lawmakers disagree. They say it would be yet another example of the EU moving away from being a peace project and towards becoming a federalist superpower to benefit big business, including the arms industry. Jerome Hughes at the European Parliament, Brussels.
The UK has marked the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. The royal family paraded the capital over the long bank holiday weekend, and Transport for London finally opened the long-awaited Elizabeth line. But strikes put a damper on things, with members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union, desperate for better pay, walked off the job. Rose works for TfL. After a long day on the picket line, she spoke at the People's Assembly. The cost of living crisis has hit hard, but who will bear the brunt?
This is affecting all working people of all different types in all parts of the country. And that means that we do have to come together. We do need to recognise that we are in this fight together.
The government must act. It must act to make sure that children aren't hungry. It must act to make sure that people don't lose their homes. It must act so that people can go on holiday. That's an important thing as well. And we're going to lose all of that across the next few months unless the government changes course.
The speakers insisted the key to success was unity. Massive rallies are being planned, and people from a myriad of causes will be attending.
We're in a situation now where in the most serious cost of living crisis, the most serious attack on working people that there's been for generations, our government is considering increasing what is already a massive defence budget, a massive arms spending budget. And that seems to us to be completely absurd and actually disgraceful.
The speakers here today warned that dire poverty is knocking on the doors of millions of people across the UK, and the government has no intention of intervening. Record price hikes have already happened, and more is just around the corner. Food, fuel, energy bills, mortgage premiums, national insurance contributions and tuition fees. You name it, the price has gone up. Politicians are blaming the UK's predicament on external factors.
But Mr. Speaker, the war's most significant impact domestically is on the cost of living. COVID and global factors meant goods and energy prices were already high. Statistics published this morning show that inflation in February was 6.2%.
But during the same period, energy companies have reported record profits. City bonuses have gone up six times wages, and politicians have made it to the UK's rich list. Households have been promised a few hundred pounds in relief, but it won't even scratch the surface, as millions of families wonder where their next meal is coming from. Bianca Rahimi, London.
With unions showing rare unity, hospitals were brought to a near halt across France due to a major strike. Since the Great Recession began, seemingly no group in France, other than the Yellow Vests, have protested more often than medical workers. France's healthcare system was ranked number one in the world as recently as the year 2000 by the United Nations. However, its quality has plummeted following over a decade of banker bailouts and austerity cuts. Neoliberal economics as applied to public health care has created too many complaints by medical workers to list. Frozen salaries, slashed budgets, overwork, closed hospitals, a lack of equipment, gutted morale, and much more. Thousands of medical workers who refused orders to get coronavirus vaccines haven't been reintegrated, even though corona restrictions have ended in France. And that has created even more labor problems.
When you don't replace workers who retire or quit, then you're going to have longer wait times for critical medical care and worsened medical care overall. It's just gotten harder and harder to work at a hospital every year. We now have so few personnel that it feels like every single day is a strike day.
The degraded service has been dramatic and a common topic across France for years. The healthcare system is used by everybody, so politicians haven't been able to limit the negative impact to just the lower classes.
After 5 years of Macron, our healthcare system is in a state of catastrophe. We're seeing more and more people die from a lack of treatment. We have the money inside France already. Just tax the rich and businesses. Go after tax evasion and stop focusing public policy on the richest 20% of society. If we do that, then we'll have good public services and good healthcare.
The first round of legislative elections are less than a week away. The strike is a black eye for President Emmanuel Macron, just as he's trying to preserve his absolute majority in Parliament, which is crucial for him to be able to force through more neoliberal austerity measures. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Palestinians protested in the blockaded Gaza Strip to mark the 55th anniversary of Nakba Day, meaning the Day of Setback. Nakba Day refers to the defeat of Arab armies in the 1967 war, which saw Israel's complete occupation of Palestine and Al-Quds, as well as the displacement and disposition of more Palestinians. In recent weeks, extremist Jewish settlers backed by Israeli forces have been violating the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. During a press conference, Palestinian resistance factions vowed to continue on their path of resistance against the Israeli occupation.
The criminal Zionist enemy must understand that the Palestinian people will always protect Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Palestinian people will sacrifice their lives for the sake of Al-Quds. Aggression against Al-Aqsa and Al-Quds will only happen over the dead bodies of Palestinians.
Nakba Day came just 19 days after Nakba Day of 1948, which saw the forceful displacement and disposition of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians upon the creation of the Israeli regime. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
As we mark the 55th anniversary of the Zionist aggression of 1967, we assert that we will continue to fight for the sake of liberating Al-Quds, the eternal capital of Palestine. There is no such thing as Zionist sovereignty over Al-Quds or over Palestine. Al-Quds, Al-Aqsa, and Palestine belong to the Palestinian people.
Decades on, Palestinians have been trying to liberate their occupied lands by all forms of resistance.
As they mark the 55th anniversary of Nakba Day, Palestinians in Gaza say they will continue to resist the Israeli occupation until the liberation of their land. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
In a new report aimed at highlighting hunger hotspots, the UN bodies warned that Afghanistan is the new entry to the list of countries at highest alert, facing catastrophic conditions. The report says, beside other causes, the ripple effects of the war in Ukraine, including rising prices, are adding to the difficulties of people to provide food.
Today, food prices are skyrocketing globally due to war in Ukraine and wheat and food exports crisis. Afghanistan, as an importing and dependent country, has received major impacts. Since we don't receive imported food or goods, we witness a quick rise in prices and food scarcity. Now the prices of food items are doubled and few people can afford them.
At the same time, Afghan middle-class families are sliding into poverty and hunger, as unemployment has been on the rise. Some also say that they are struggling to make ends meet.
Unemployment and poverty have severely increased. Not only me, but all of the people have slided into poverty. Joblessness has harmed us all. Last year I was a construction worker, but today I can't provide some loaves of bread for my family as I am unemployed. We are unable to make ends meet. The prices of food items have already soared.
Advocates in the country express concern about Afghanistan's worsening situation, saying the West, especially the U.S., share a major role in world poor people suffering.
If we provide the percentage, the U.S. is 60-70% to blame for the ongoing crisis in Afghanistan, mainly due to their moves and mistakes. In addition, now the Ukraine war is affecting the Afghan economy, so who is prolonging the war in Ukraine? Again, the Western bloc, including the U.S. and the U.K. Prolonging the war might harm superpowers, but it definitely ruins the economy and lives of vulnerable people across the globe.
The UN Refugee Agency has also called for $3 billion in urgent aid to Afghanistan before winter to avert famine and death. Afghanistan is facing multiple humanitarian crises. Poverty and hunger, in particular, are taking their toll on millions of people in the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Convincing a deeply polarized American public that the January 6th Capitol riot was not a spontaneous act of violence, but the culmination of a months-long plot by former President Donald Trump and his allies to undermine the results of the 2020 presidential election, is no easy task for the House Select Committee investigating the deadly assault on the Capitol. We have prepared for you an article written by Lauren Gambino. The piece is titled, January 6th Hearing, Trump Was at Heart of Plot That Led to Attempted Coup. Select Committee investigating the deadly January 6th assault on the U.S. Capitol in 2021 said former President Donald Trump was at the center of a sprawling conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election that culminated in an attempted coup. With a shocking new accounting of the worst attack on the halls of U.S. Congress in more than two centuries, the committee outlined the gripping detail over the course of 2 hours on Thursday night, 9th of June. The grave threat posed to American democracy then and now by the former president's actions. In new evidence, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, a Republican from Wyoming and the committee's vice chair, said of Donald Trump, "Aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, his vice president, the president responded with his statement, 'Maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence deserves it.'" Congressman Benny Thompson, a Mississippi Democrat and chair of the committee, said, "The American people deserve answers," adding, So tonight and over the next few weeks, we're going to remind you of the reality of what happened on that day. Congressman Benny Thompson and Congresswoman Liz Cheney laid out what they described as the unconstitutional misconduct of a former president who continues to peddle the lie that the election he lost to the Democrats Joe Biden was stolen from him, a lie they argue that he knows to be false. Liz Cheney said during the primetime proceedings, "All Americans should keep in mind this fact. On the morning of 6th of January 2021, President Donald Trump's intention was to remain President of the United States despite the lawful outcome of the 2020 presidential election, and in violation of his constitutional obligation to relinquish power." Their presentation featured never-before-seen video clips from the attack by extremist supporters of Donald Trump, who stormed the U.S. Capitol building to try to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden's win. In a cinematic display meant to grip a weary public, the House panel weaved video footage of the violence together with live testimony and videotaped depositions from some of Donald Trump's closest allies and family members. These included the former Attorney General William Barr, Donald Trump's daughter and White House advisor Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump's son-in-law and advisor Jared Kushner, and a longtime aide and spokesperson Jason Miller. The effect was piercing. The first of six public hearings offered revelations on what Congressman Benny Thompson described as a sprawling multi-step conspiracy aimed at overturning the presidential election. Members of the audience gasped when Liz Cheney said Donald Trump, after being informed the mob was calling for Mike Pence to be hanged, told aides that perhaps his vice president deserved it. Donald Trump was furious that Mike Pence, presiding over a joint session of Congress in what is typically a ceremonial role, refused to reject the certification of Joe Biden's victory, as Trump publicly and privately pressured him to do. The committee showed a clip of William Barr saying he repeatedly told Donald Trump in no uncertain terms that he had lost the election, and the claims of it being stolen because of widespread voting fraud were simply untrue. In another interview, Ivanka Trump said she accepted William Barr's determination that the presidential election had been fair. On Friday morning, 10th of June, Donald Trump posted on his own Truth Social platform, having been banned from Twitter, calling William Barr weak and frightened, and his own daughter checked out. Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney also announced that multiple House Republicans sought pardons from Donald Trump for their involvement in the insurrection, including Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, who declined a request to testify before the committee. Scott Perry's office denied the allegation. The evening presentation also included witnesses' testimony from Nick Quested, a British documentary filmmaker who was embedded with the far-right Proud Boys militia group that led the storming of the Capitol. Video footage he filmed helped chronicle the Proud Boys' involvement in planning the assault. On Friday morning, 10th of June, British documentary filmmaker Nick Quested told ABC's Good Morning America that at the point the far-right extremists he was filming breached the first barriers on the outskirts of the Capitol, it all changed, as men protesting far-left Antifa turned into rioters challenging the outnumbered police officers. He said, "It crossed the Rubicon at that point, and the mob was pouring over the Capitol steps like water." The panel also heard from Caroline Edwards, a Capitol police officer who described in harrowing detail how she was assaulted by the mob, some armed with bats, clubs and even spray. Caroline Edwards said she was knocked unconscious on the steps, and after she came to, she ran to the overwhelmed officers trying to stop insurrectionists breaking into the Senate. She said the scene was like a war zone and she was slipping on her fellow officers' blood. She added, "It was carnage. It was chaos." Drawing on the findings of the nearly year-long investigation, which includes more than 100 subpoenas, 1,000 interviews and 100,000 documents, the Select Committee will attempt to establish a comprehensive sequence of events that built to the cold January day when Donald Trump encouraged his supporters to fight like hell. The attack, which played out in real time on national television, left more than 100 police officers injured as they clashed with a pro-Trump mob. 9 people lost their lives in connection with the riot, including a woman who was fatally shot by a Capitol Police officer as she attempted to breach the House chamber. Convincing a deeply polarized American public that the Capitol riot was not a spontaneous act of violence, but rather the culmination of a months-long plot by Donald Trump and his allies to undermine the results of the presidential election, is no easy task for the committee. Congressman Benny Thompson argued that American democracy remains in danger, as many Republicans at local and national level continue to boost the myth that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Donald Trump and use it for their own election campaigns. Congressman Benny Thompson said the conspiracy to thwart the will of the people is not over. He said 6th of January and the lies that led to insurrection have put 2.5 centuries of constitutional democracy at risk. The world is watching what we do here, he said. The Select Committee is composed of 7 Democrats and 2 Republicans. Speaking with the Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles, California, before the hearing on Wednesday, 8th of June, President Biden said the assault on the Capitol was a clear and flagrant violation of America's Constitution. He said a lot of Americans are going to see for the first time some of the details. Hundreds have been charged in connection with the events of 6th of January 2021, including some with seditious conspiracy. The hearings will resume in the coming days.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah the Kind. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. You are listening to this program, Lantern, from IRIB English Radio. On the continuation of Lantern, we'll listen to an interesting story. Steve Jobs dies a billionaire with a fortune of $7 billion at the age of 56 from pancreatic cancer, and these are his last words. At this moment, lying on the bed, sick and remembering all my life, I realize that all my recognition and wealth that I have is meaningless in the face of imminent death. You can hire someone to drive a car for you, make money for you, but you cannot rent someone to carry the disease for you. As we get older, we are smarter, and we slowly realize that the watch is worth $30 or $300, both of which show the same time, whether we drive a car worth 150,000 or a car worth 2,000, the road and distance are the same. We reach the same destination. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin astain. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with the truth of death. As we know, death is a natural phenomenon. I mean, there's no living thing that can avoid or escape death. Death comes to all living things. This is a natural rule. This is a rule of life in the whole world. There's a saying in the Persian language that can be translated in such bolatasya hiranginist. There's any darker color than black. It means that there isn't anything beyond death, or death is the ultimate reality. We find that people are instinctively and naturally inclined to find the lives to be quite meaningful. No sane individual wants to live a meaningless life or to be wandering around here and there. Not physically, but psychologically, but from the point of intellection and the intellectual aspect of one's life. So we find that those people who are really very attentive to their lives and who believe that are coming into this world hasn't been quite haphazard or, for example, by chance. Rather, we are expected to have a set goal in front of ourselves. That is, everybody is expected to live a meaningful life. Imagine the lives of great people in any community. Some people have been renowned because of, for example, having made great mathematicians, great medical doctors, great engineers, and so on. Or, for example, even great artists. Okay. When we read the biographies and more than the, kinds of relations with others, with their peers in the communities, when we study the notes or, for example, the reflections, we find that they've had a very high aim in their lives, and toward those high aims they have moved. And one of the products or some of the byproducts of having a meaningful life has been, for example, a man or a woman has made a high ranking, a top ranking, and quite respectful personality.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Imagine the lives of, for example, great chemists, great physicists, or great, for example, medical doctors, mathematicians, or artists, and so on. Okay, you find that everybody wants to live forever. And one of the great manifestations of being remembered even after one's death is that throughout one's lifetime, a person does everything in order to leave something of his own fame on the ground, something quite tangible. If you take a trip to some other countries, you find that in some streets you find the small statues of some great people. And usually the names or date of birth and date of death. And the field of expertise, okay, these items are indicated somewhere in the lower part of the statute. Now you find that, I mean, these great people, for example, someone was a great chemist, someone was a great, for example, mathematician and so on. You find that all of them have remained, I mean, all of them intended to remain immortal, but as are, I mean, a biological life cannot go eternal, so we have to leave something behind which is more stable, which is expected to remain many, many years, even centuries after our death. Because of this, we find that great people have accomplished very important tasks. According to Lev Tolstoy, the Russian literary figure, this kind of background noise makes him think that, is there any meaning in my life that cannot be deteriorated, cannot be made meaningless through death? Leopardi, in this context, in similar context, Leopardi indicates that whatever has always made me preoccupied is that, will there be any kind of high aim beyond idleness that death wouldn't deteriorate, wouldn't shock? Now you find that in order to remain eternal, or in order to live an eternal life, or in order to live in such a condition that even centuries after our death, our name is remembered with great respect, quite respectfully, by the sages, if not by the lay people, is because we accomplish very great tasks in our lives. For example, please note carefully that many great literary figures or scientists lived in this world, okay? We may not know, even today, quite readily, too many points about the highlights of their lives, yet we always benefit from the invention or from the contribution to human life or the contribution to knowledge. Imagine that, for example, we always remember Louis Pasteur, the French scientist, or, for example, Michael Faraday, who discovered electricity, or others, for example. Thank you very much.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi aman Allah. Ala bi dhikrillahi
tatma'innul qulub. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.